From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to this Tuesday, August 27th edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, the Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. Glad to have you joining us today. Let's hit some of the highlights that we'll be bringing your way.
Today, Israeli Special Forces successfully rescued one of our hostages from Hamas captivity in Gaza.
That was IDF spokesman Daniel Hagari earlier today sharing the great news. But while Israel continues to work towards freeing the remaining 108 hostages, Iran continues to rattle its saber, saying that revenge against the Israeli entity is inevitable.
Iran has made those threats and has said that they intend to retaliate. And so we have to take that very seriously. And so we will continue to remain postured, and we are well postured, to be able to support the defenses of Israel as well as protect our own forces.
Well, that was Pentagon Press Secretary Pat Ryder earlier today. But while the U.S. is supporting Israel, is it also, indirectly at least, supporting Israel's enemies? We'll talk about that today with U.S. Senator Pete Ricketts of Nebraska. Meanwhile, right here in the U.S., attention is being given to the letter that Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg sent yesterday to the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan. In that letter, Zuckerberg acknowledged that his company made mistakes. It really bowed to the pressure of the Biden administration to silence those pushing content that went against their narrative.
This is a great victory for the First Amendment. For Mr. Zuckerberg to come out and acknowledge that information was suppressed about COVID, and to see Mr. Zuckerberg acknowledging this is really important. It shows the lengths that the Biden administration went to try to shut this information down.
That was House Judiciary Committee member Congressman Laurel Lee. And I'll be joined here in just a couple of moments by another member of that committee, Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona, and get his thoughts on all of it. And speaking of shutting down the opposition, well, the morally bankrupt Southern Poverty League is out at it again, this time accusing our friends at Alliance Defending Freedom of spreading conspiracy theory. The SPLC claims that conservatives are not being debanked because of their religious or political affiliations. Well, ADF's Jeremy Tedesco will be joining me to respond to the SPLC. And of course, the SPLC is not the only leftist organization trying to shut down conservatives. Josh Hammer from the Article 3 Project, he also will be joining me to discuss what other groups are doing and what can be done to counter all of those attacks. Also on today's program, I'll be joined by a West Virginia lawmaker who is working to ensure that his state does not join a movement to legalize mercy killings. That's medically assisted suicide. That certainly is a movement that is spreading across the Western world and now is trying to get its claws in West Virginia. So we've got a packed show coming your way. Of course, the website, TonyPerkins.com, tons of resources available there for you, including a link to Family Research Council's 2024 election survey. If you, in any shape, form, or fashion, are concerned about the direction our nation is headed, then make your voice heard with the Family Research Council's 2024 election survey. Trust me, your input can help shape the future. So take a stand for faith, for family, for freedom, and let us know the issues that matter most to you in this election season. You can do so by simply texting the word election to 67742. Again, that's election to 67742. All right, let's jump into our first topic for the day. In a letter sent yesterday to House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, Mark Zuckerberg, who, of course, is the CEO of Facebook's Meta company, our parent company, Meta, he expressed regret for not speaking out against the pressure that his social media platform received from the Biden administration to censor certain COVID-related content. He also acknowledged how it was a mistake to limit the reach of the media reporting on the corruption allegations involving the family of then Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. Does this deal a blow to the left's effort to silence conservatives? Well, joining me now to talk about this and more is Congressman Andy Biggs, who is a member of the Judiciary Committee, as well as the Oversight and Accountability Committee. He represents Arizona's 5th Congressional District. Congressman Biggs, my friend, always great to see you. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jody. It's always good to see you. We miss you on Capitol Hill, but it's good to see you here, man.
Well, thank you. And likewise to you and all the great guys and gals there on Capitol Hill. Listen, there were also there were actually a couple of probably three different main issues addressed in the letter. So let's start with this one. The COVID issue. Let's jump also into the Hunter Biden laptop report. Your reaction to that?
Well, it's too little too late, quite frankly. They facilitated suppression of COVID information. I mean, ivermectin, for instance. You had the CDC attacking ivermectin. Ivermectin has been used safely by humans for two decades at least. So I get what Zuckerberg is trying to do. He's trying to say, well, mea culpa, you know, but he waited, oddly enough, didn't he, for several years. But we all knew what was going on. And the bottom line, Jody, is this. The ivermectin issue, the other suppression and censorship that the Facebook and Meta did, they're trying to say that that was a result of government. And if it was a result of government, which I believe it was, then we need to go in and rattle the chains of government. We can't just say, hey, this is a big victory for the First Amendment that somebody finally admitted. There's nobody being held accountable. And that's what needs to happen here, Jody. Not just saying mea culpa, somebody has to be held accountable.
Yeah, and I love the fact that you came right out and said it's too little too late, because it really is. I mean, we're years removed from all of this, and why come out now? I did want to read this to you. The White House responded in a statement. I want to read this statement. They said, when confronted with a deadly pandemic, this administration encouraged responsible actions to protect public health and safety. Our position has been clear and consistent. We believe tech companies and other private actors should take into account the effects their actions have on the American people while making independent choices about the information they present. All right. What do you make of that? Your reaction to it?
Well, that's the White House trying to distance themselves from the claim that they were in actually censoring and violating First Amendment rights. I think this is the problem, Jody, is that they don't want accountability. The reality is they were putting pressure not just on that, but they were impacting the election by suppressing the Hunter Biden story, the laptop story, which they claimed was Russian disinformation, and it wasn't. They knew it was real. They knew it was real for a year. The FBI did a year before the election. So the bottom line is the White House was actually threatening people and leveraging their power against people who are regulated by the White House and the executive branch. That is a violation of the First Amendment. And quite frankly, if you were censored, you should have a claim now under the First Amendment. And the reality is they own this. The White House owns this. You can't walk away and say, look, you know, we were telling you not to do stuff. Because they were, because we've got all these emails, right, Jody, going back and forth. You can't say we were just advising you. That's not true. It is a flat out lie. And that's the problem with this current administration, in my opinion.
And so many of us were, I believe you were in on it. I know I was, or during all of this from Facebook, the Twitter, I mean, across the board, there was so much censoring taking place, particularly of conservatives. And I'm so thrilled that this continues to go forward. And I just echo what you say in great hopes and encouragement that accountability will actually take place. If I can, Andy, let me switch gears a little bit, because a third part of the letter that Zuckerberg sent had to do with how he really benefited Democrats over Republicans. And he basically is saying now that he wants to be neutral in all the so-called Zuckerbucks, that he's not planning on making that kind of contribution this cycle. Your thoughts on that?
Well, number one, again, he impacted the election right here in Arizona. Our government took millions of dollars from Zuckerbucks, and that impacted the election. So, okay, that's great. But maybe the states now have come out and said you can't participate are really influencing him. Again, when somebody's charged with a crime and they say, well, yeah, that was bad, you know, but it was legal at the time. But now the problem is it was morally wrong, ethically wrong, and quite frankly, in my opinion, it probably violated the federal statutes of the FEC. But the reality is, good, stay out of it. Then that means your company's going to stay out of it, and let's have free reign. Unless you have CSAM stuff that you have to suppress under law already, then let's go ahead. But don't forget this, Jody. They want to be treated like they're a platform and have the immunities from this kind of conduct, as opposed to if you're a publisher, you have liability on all the things in all three areas that he mentions. And so my opinion is this: we need to get rid of Section 270. Which allows these platforms to have protections and immunity. We need to go after that, change that, so they're held accountable for the censorship that they do. And where Mark Zuckerberg's out there throwing bucks around, he needs to be held accountable for that too. And that's the problem. If you never hold anybody accountable and you just say, well, thanks for apologizing, we're going to be nice to you, then you don't deter anybody else or any other bad actor.
Absolutely. Congressman Andy Biggs, I got so much more I want to cover with you. But before I let you go, I think we've got to hit on this. You and I have been on the border many, many times together. And so before I let you go, I want to throw out a question related to the border, as obviously Arizona is a border state. But your thoughts on Kamala Harris's ad on the border and how it features Trump's border walls in the background?
Well, I've taken you to the border. We've been together, you know, and I've been there many times. I can tell you there's a distinction between the Trump border wall and the Obama fence. And all of the fencing that she uses in her ad, the B-roll, it's all Trump wall. And then she wants to say how tough she is on the border. That's also not true. I can tell you that Yuma County, less fewer than 9,000 encounters the last year Trump was president. Guess what? They're doing that about every 10, 12 days now under this administration. That's Kamala's responsibility. She failed. Don't be deceived, my friends.
Absolutely. I mean, she's walking around flexing her muscles, you know. Look, I'm so big on the border. It is all Trump's fence in the back. It's unbelievable. Congressman Andy Biggs, Arizona's 5th District, always an honor to see you, my friend. Thank you for joining us on Washington Watch.
Yeah, God bless you and your family. Thanks, Jody.
Thanks, Andy. All right, after the break, we've got a lot more coming your way. But specifically, we're going to be going to West Virginia. They're running a counter to a movement there to legalize mercy killings. That's medically assisted suicide. Well, we've seen that being spread all across the Western world. Now it's coming right here to West Virginia. Stay tuned. We'll cover that issue right after the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, filling in for Tony, and glad to have you on board with us as well. All right, yesterday on the program, for those of you who are able to join us, we talked about the importance of voting in this upcoming election, and not just because of the race for the White House. There are a number of congressional races to keep in mind, as well as many other items that are going to be on ballots, both at state and local levels. Well, if you live in West Virginia, then listen up. This November, voters in the state will find on their ballot West Virginia Amendment Number 1. That specific amendment is all about protecting persons against medically assisted suicide. And joining me now to talk about this is the state lawmaker behind that amendment, Delegate Pat McGeehan. Delegate McGeehan, welcome to Washington Watch. Glad to have you.
Hey, good to be with you, Jody. I appreciate it.
Well, it's our honor, and thank you for leading the way here. All right, tell us about this amendment.
So the amendment just places what's already illegal in West Virginia into the state constitution for more security going forward. It's implicitly illegal in West Virginia, but we want to send a message against this sort of nihilistic euthanasia movement sweeping the Western world to other red states like ours, like West Virginia. Like, this is the gold standard. You need to have it in the state constitution because, you know, laws are not simply prescriptive. They're also pedagogical. They teach people. And we need to send a message that, hey, we need to stand firm against this movement that's sweeping the Western world. If you look at the latest stats coming out of Canada's MAID program, which is just a fancy way of saying they're killing their own citizens, in Canada right now, it is the fifth leading cause of death. And it's horrific once you start looking into what's going on in Canada. 10 states have legalized euthanasia in one form or another now. Oregon and Vermont just recently now opened up their euthanasia programs to not just their state residents, but to non-residents. And I guess they just thought it was discrimination on their part just to kill their own citizens. So now you have this sort of euthanasia tourism. So I had a constituent that called me and was struggling, and he recently got diagnosed, or at the time, a year ago, he was diagnosed with a form of colon cancer, but the doctors told him, you know, it could go into remission in a couple years. But, you know, he was scared. He didn't believe. He was an atheist. And he went to Oregon on Easter Sunday, and I stayed on the phone with him. He flew into Portland, tried to talk him out of it, and he ended his life via medically assisted suicide. And out there in Oregon, you have to wait 2 weeks if you're non-resident right now. Portland is essentially grown into a whole marketplace for non-residents coming in to kill themselves. And so they have a whole marketplace of hotels and Airbnbs that cater strictly to those that are out of state traveling into these northwestern states like Oregon. Really, they're death hotels, death Airbnbs. And so you wait 2 weeks, basically, and then you go down to the local doctor. He signs off on it. You get a script. You go to the local pharmacy. You're just like any other medication, they give you a cocktail of poisons. You go back by yourself into one of these hotels devoted towards this sort of law for out-of-state residents. Swallow the cocktail of poison. It destroys your organs. Social workers actually come by the next day, collect all the bodies in these hotels, and burn them. And you know what?
Wow.
You got to push back against this. This is just part of a broader trend of nihilism that's sweeping our country with the progressive liberal order. And I'm sick of it.
So this is your driving the stake in the ground, in essence, saying not in West Virginia. We're not going there, and we're going to place it in the state constitution. Just as you're watching what's happening, be it in Canada or here in our own country and various other states. So what do you say to those who argue that your state, West Virginia, already has a code that prevents medically assisted suicide or so-called mercy killings, whatever we want to call it?
Well, I mean, most people don't even know that it's illegal or legal. And so that's what I would just tell them. Hey, look, if you want it firmly prohibited, put it in the state constitution. Because you never know who's going to be in office next. You know, it might not be guys like me. It might not be guys that are pro-life on the Republican side. And so you do not want arbitrary judgments on good versus bad suicide being decided by government officials. I mean, deciding which suicides are good and which are bad places enormous power in the hands of government officials. And it just leads to arbitrary decisions on where you draw the line. And that just has devastating consequences for individuals in our society. You know, the progressive liberal order likes to reduce morality to just consent, and every relationship somehow has an sort of egalitarian equal notion to it. But doctors have an enormous power of authority in our society. So that doctor-patient power relationship is extremely imbalanced. And so when a doctor suggests to a patient, hey, you can go through with assisted suicide, that's an option, that can heavily influence patients, especially vulnerable patients, that make it very hard to even ensure that the decision is voluntary at all.
Absolutely. You know, we've got less than a minute remaining here, but one of the big issues, I remember when Oregon, some of these other states were going through their battle over this, the argument of so-called death with dignity or some sort of an appeal for compassion was put into the situation as somehow this is an act of dignity. Real quickly, do you have a response to that?
They're twisting the right order definition of compassion. And it preys on a lot of the pro-life movement within our own sort of ranks because, you know, a lot of people have compassion for the unborn child. And so now they're preying on that compassion that we already hold, and they're trying to twist it and pervert it. You know, I'll just say one thing, and this can be an argument that people need to take into consideration if they're secular or if they're atheists or non-believers. Insurance companies may deny coverage for expensive treatments like cancer care or just to cover assisted suicide because this is already happening. Hey, you know what? We're not going to cover the chemo you need for the next 2 years, but we will cover the doctor's visit to get your cocktail of poisons.
West Virginia Delegate Pat McGeehan, thank you so much. Thank you for standing in the gap for us. An honor to have you on Washington Watch. All right, after the break, we're going to be talking about how U.S. tax dollars may be funding Hezbollah. You don't want to miss what's coming up. We'll be joined by Senator Ricketts in just a moment.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Thank you for joining us today. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, and glad to have you with us. All right, yesterday, Israel's Defense Minister Yoav Gallant met with General Charles Q. Brown, who is our nation's highest-ranking military officer and the principal military advisor to the president. And during the meeting, Gallant made the statement, he said, Iran's aggression has reached an all-time high. Folks, that's alarming. And all of this comes as the chief of staff of the Iranian Armed Forces reportedly confirmed yesterday that revenge against the Israeli entity is inevitable, and that what we all witnessed yesterday is only part of the revenge that's yet to come. So is the U.S. doing everything that it can do to support Israel? Or might we in some capacity be bolstering Israel's enemies, as some are certainly reporting and suggesting? Well, joining me now to discuss this is U.S. Senator Pete Ricketts of Nebraska. He serves on the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. Senator Ricketts, welcome back to Washington Watch. It's always an honor to have you.
Thank you, Congressman. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, our privilege indeed. So, look, before we get in the reports that we're seeing on how U.S. tax dollars may be supporting Hezbollah, let's start. I'd like to get your reaction on what's happening just the last few days in Israel, including the hostage rescue just yesterday.
Well, the IDF is demonstrating what a great elite force it is by being able to rescue these hostages. And we should continue to support them and make sure they've got the materials they need to be able to do that. And sadly, this administration, this Biden-Harris administration, has been a poor friend to Israel, slowing up delivery of weapons, calling on them to be the one to not escalate, like somehow Israel is the obstacle to peace here rather than Iran, who is funding all these terrorists. What we need to do is a better job of supporting our ally because they know what they're doing. This rescue demonstrates they know what they're doing. And we got to send a strong message to the rest of the world that terrorism is not going to be tolerated.
So that sets up, I really like to get your overall assessment of all these ceasefire talks that are taking place, given what you just said with the slow walking support that our current administration has shown to Israel. What's your assessment of the ceasefire talks?
To me, Netanyahu has agreed to a framework that he's probably giving up a lot more than he wanted to. And it just shows how the Biden administration is not supporting him when the president supposedly comes back, according to a report by Axios, that he asked him to give up even more. You know, we ought to remember, who are the bad guys here? Well, it's Iran. They're the theocracy. They're the ones that's anti-democratic. They're the ones that's funding these terrorists. And so what we really need to do is be sending a strong message to Iran that we're not going to appease them, that we're going to level sanctions on them, we're going to enforce those sanctions, and that we're going to support our friend Israel. That's actually going to get more progress toward peace when Iran knows that they have no place to go. Instead, in July, I think I read a report that the Biden administration freed up another $10 billion of oil money for Iran. That's just allowing them to continue to fund this. It's exactly the wrong thing to do. We need to stop this appeasement first policy by the Biden administration and to support Israel and make sure that everybody knows Hamas is a terrorist organization. They started this war. Frankly, what they should do is Hamas should just surrender. They started this. They should just surrender.
Absolutely. Look, I couldn't agree with you more. And even the report you referenced is part of the reporting, the accusations that's going on, that our tax dollars are actually, at the end of the day, funding our enemies. So let's talk about that. What about our tax dollars, maybe inadvertently, but somehow or other supporting Hezbollah, and a lot of it going through aid to Lebanon and the United Nations. But what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so let's start with what we know for sure, which is our tax dollars have been going to UNRWA, the United Nations work and relief agency for Palestine in the Middle East. And we know that they have been supporting terrorists and Hamas, right? UNRWA schools preach hatred, martyrdom, anti-Semitism, killing Jews, all that. And they've been used to stage attacks, store weapons. So we know that our tax dollars, because of the Biden-Harris administration, have gone to a terrorist organization or supported a terrorist organization, at the very least, called Hamas. We know that 12 UNRWA employees participated either directly or indirectly in the October 7th atrocity. Now we're getting reports that, our money through the United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon and the Lebanese Armed Forces, the billions of dollars we've given us 2006, may be going to Hezbollah. And so given our experience with Hamas and what happened with UNRWA, this is totally plausible. We need to investigate it and find out. But I got to tell you, I've talked to Israeli Defense Force soldiers who have been on the front line of Lebanon, and they tell me this, like, UNIFIL bases, they're all overrun with Hezbollah. There's no United Nations people there. There's no Lebanese army there on that border with Israel. It's all Hezbollah. And so if somebody's saying that our tax dollars are getting funneled through those two organizations, UNIFIL and the LAF, to Hezbollah, it's very believable. And again, I've had soldiers on the ground tell me they think that really what we're seeing there is we've certainly seen no effort to disarm Hezbollah or create a buffer zone like they're supposed to. And what we're seeing is that their bases are actually being used by Hezbollah. At least that's what these soldiers claim.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard the same thing as well. Listen, on a related note, we simply are out of time now. I'm going to have to get you back and talk more specifically about this a little bit later. But you and Senator Tim Scott have a bill, the Stop Support for Hamas Act. We hear a lot about our need, as we've been talking about, the need to support Israel. But we also have to make sure we are not supporting Israel. And I just want to thank you and Senator Scott for leading the charge on that. We'll have to get you back to talk about that specifically.
Yeah, we need to pass the Stop Support of Hamas Act to stop the funding going to Hamas and then stop any funding going to Hezbollah as well.
Senator Pete Ricketts of Nebraska, thank you for standing in the gap. Thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. All right, after the break, we're going to talk about the SPLC and other leftist organizations that have been working tirelessly, it seems, to shut down conservatives and other ideological opponents. What can be done to stop them? Well, stay tuned to find out. We'll be back in a moment.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Thank you.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good afternoon, and thank you so much for joining us. I am your host, Jody Heiss. All right, just a quick reminder here. Our Pray, Vote, Stand Summit is taking place October 3rd through the 6th in Washington, D.C., and we would love for you to come join us. I want to encourage you to go to our website about this, PrayVoteStand.org. Visit PrayVoteStand.org for more information and to register today. It's one of those events, I can assure you, you will be glad that you attended. And also, now that both party conventions are over, I mentioned this as we started the program today, but if you are concerned, and I know you are, concerned about the direction our nation's headed, you can make your voice heard. You can visit Family Research Council's 2024 election survey and let us know those issues that are most important to you. To do so, simply text the word election to 67742, and you will be able to participate in that. All right. If you listen or watch this program regularly, you know that we have talked a number of times about the debanking issue. That's where financial companies deny services to customers based on their religious or political affiliations. Well, the morally bankrupt Southern Poverty Law Center recently has pushed back on our friends at the Alliance Defending Freedom, accusing them of spreading a false narrative and conspiracy theory. So we felt it was only right to have with us a voice who can respond to the so-called analysis from the SPLC. Joining me now is Jeremy Tedesco. He's a senior counsel and senior vice president of corporate engagement at Alliance Defending Freedom. Jeremy, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Thanks, Jody. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. So where shall we begin? Let's start with it. The SPLC says there's a lack of evidence that debanking is even happening, and that's simply just not true, is it?
Really, it's like responding to Clown World. The one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing over at SPLC's headquarters, because they are one of the biggest proponents of urging financial institutions to debank people they disagree with, namely Alliance Defending Freedom, where I work, Family Research Council, who's hosting the show, and several other Christian mainstream ministries that they disagree with. And they are actively urging financial institutions to debank us. Yet they come out with an article saying that we're making the whole thing up. So it is really laughable. They really have become very much clown world over there. It's hard to take them seriously, but every once in a while we respond like this because look, debanking is a serious issue. It is happening. It's on the rise.
It is happening.
And it's impacting Christian ministries. Absolutely. I've got a great story to share with you about that.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Let's share the story because, yeah, you are so right, Jeremy. It is the SPLC, among others, but they are one of the major ones who are leading the charge. They are throwing fuel on the fire for debanking conservative organizations.
Absolutely right. And so, you know, the idea that there's
share
no debanking
your story.
Happening,
I want to hear it.
Yeah, the idea that there's no debanking happening is you know, obviously not true. The facts tell a different story. Our client, Indigenous Advanced Ministries, does overseas relief work in Uganda. It's a Tennessee-based ministry. Back in April of 2023, they got a notice out of the blue from Bank of America, where they had banked for 8 or 9 years as a ministry, that their account was being canceled, that the account of a local church in Tennessee that gives to them was being canceled. And the reason they gave was no reason at all. It was hiding behind vague policy terms like risk tolerance and business type disagreement. And so, you know, this caused a huge problem for the ministry, a bigger problem for the people on the ground in Uganda where they support, because the people in Uganda don't live paycheck to paycheck. They live meal to meal. And so when Bank of America canceled this account out of the blue, it put our ministry and client in Tennessee and the people they serve on the ground in serious risk of not getting the essential services, even food they needed. So, you know, that's just one example. JP Morgan Chase has debanked Sam Brownback and the National Committee for Religious Freedom, a religious nonprofit that supports religious freedom in America. Chase has debanked numerous other organizations like the Arkansas Family Council, which is a pro-life and pro-family organization down in Arkansas, because they consider them high risk. We have resources on our website that go through 12, 15, maybe up to 20 examples at this point of debanking that's going on. Now, look, the banks never say, oh, yeah, you got us. We debanked you because we disagree with your religion or your politics. But the thing is, these debankings of religious and conservative groups are on the rise. And so it's something we're paying attention to a lot at Alliance Defending Freedom. We're putting a lot of work in trying to solve the problem.
Well, we all deeply appreciate the work that ADF is doing on this. We actually had the Arkansas policy group on here with us, and they had no notice. I mean, all of a sudden, they were just canceled. No notice whatsoever. And that can destroy a ministry when everything is just shut down like that. But the SPLC has even directly claimed, in reference to ADF, that you are drawing on both the Christian right and white nationalists to try to utilize themes therein to build a case of the government trying to stop and debank and all this kind of stuff. How do you respond to these type of wild accusations?
Yeah, and it's clown world. It's what they do. Those are total lies, disgusting lies, but they are lies. And this is what they do. They lie about their perceived political enemies to try to do damage to them. I mean, the response is, we're concerned about debanking, yes, because it's affecting religious and Christian institutions, but we're concerned about it for all Americans. It is not healthy for our society to have a financial industry that is weaponized against disfavored points of view, whether they're our points of view or somebody else's. And so we really want to maintain a financial system that is viewpoint neutral, that's not, you know, picking sides in the broader cultural, social, political debates that are going on. And I think that's one thing your listeners really need to understand is there is an active, you know, intentional attempt by left-wing progressive activists, ESG activists, to capture these financial institutions and deploy them in exactly that way, as censors, you know, as people who deprive essential financial services, loans and capital to people who aren't, you know, bending the knee to the political ideology of the left. And so we must resist this. We must call on banks to return to principles of equal treatment and providing services to all, regardless of their religious and political views. And I, you know, point out we are having success. JP Morgan Chase was one of our biggest targets and still is. But they've actually made moves in the right direction. We targeted over the last couple of years through shareholder engagement and other work a policy at JP Morgan Chase called a social risk policy that included terms like hate and intolerance. They had actually used this policy to deprive certain religious organizations and political groups of payment processing services. And after our efforts to call them out on that policy and kind of their broader debanking problems at JP Morgan Chase, they actually dropped that policy this year. And they're in communication with us on a regular basis about our concerns. And we represent the concerns of a lot of Christians and conservatives about their banking practices and their penchant to debank people that the left disagrees with. So, yeah, we're making a dent. We're seeing successes.
Well, Jeremy Tedesco, I cannot thank you and all the great warriors there at ADF for the incredible work that you're doing on this and so many other issues. Thank you so much, and thank you for coming on the program today to break this down for us. Keep the torch ablaze, my friend. We appreciate it so much. And, of course, the SPLC is not the only leftist organization that's been working to shut down conservatives and other ideological opponents. There's also the Global Alliance for Responsible Media, GARM. They also oppose anyone or anything who doesn't toe the leftist party line. And while there are those like the House Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan who have been shining the light on organizations like GARM, my next guest says there's a lot more that can be done and that should be done. So joining me now to discuss this is Josh Hammer. He's a senior counsel at the Article 3 Project and host of the Josh Hammer Show and America on Trial with Josh Hammer. Josh, welcome to Washington Watch. Good to have you.
Jody, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. Look, you've written an article on this that appeared in the Federalist, and I just talked about the SPLC with our last guest. Don't know if you were able to catch all that or not. But to start this discussion off, can you tell us about this other group, the Global Alliance for Responsible Media?
Yeah, so the Global Alliance for Responsible Media is a subgroup of a broader organization called the World Federation of Advertisers. It is essentially a shadowy, nebulous organization that exists for purposes of trying to encourage leftists to boycott, demonetize, or to basically strip any kind of clout away from people on the right. That's a very vague way of phrasing it because this organization operates in fairly vague ways. But to give you a couple of concrete examples, GARM has been involved with efforts to try to demonetize Spotify for simply having the temerity to host Joe Rogan's idiosyncratic podcast. They have gone to war against Elon Musk and tried to pull advertisers away from his X platform because they are too supportive of free speech. You know, there's actually a silver lining to the GARM story, though, Congressman, because what happened, at least with GARM, was that Elon Musk threatened to sue. He actually might have formally gotten all the paperwork with the lawyers filed already, and then the parent organization actually kicked GARM to the curb. So that particular initiative is actually sidelined for now. But there's any number of other organs of what I like to call the censorship industrial complex. You know, we saw a major high-profile Supreme Court case just this term, the Murphy versus Missouri case that involves Biden administration censorship working hand in hand with the big tech oligarchs. You know, Mark Zuckerberg, actually speaking of Jim Jordan, Mark Zuckerberg just wrote that letter to Jim Jordan earlier this week where he admitted that the Biden administration strong-armed Facebook into censoring so-called dissident speech. He's saying mea culpa. It's a little too late if you ask for my opinion on that one. But, you know, the point is that there is this huge network out there, and there are various organizations such as GARM, such as a group called Acronym. Acronym is co-founded by George Soros and Reid Hoffman, the very far-left major Democratic donor who founded LinkedIn, the online media network. Acronym is involved in trying to spew leftist misinformation as well. Acronym has been closely linked to a kind of fake news organization, for lack of a better description, called Courier Newsroom. Courier Newsroom has been sprouting up all across the country, trying to essentially pretend that they are giving you real news. It has the aesthetic look of a real newspaper and a real news page. In actuality, it is really just DNC propaganda, Democratic talking points. So there's a very sophisticated network out there. And the point of my piece, Congressman, for the Federalist, was to say that Congress cannot actually just lead the charge on this. It is good that the House Judiciary Committee is on top of this. They have subpoena power. That's powerful stuff. But, you know, Republicans control more state-level attorneys general offices than they do not. And there are some state-level attorneys general, such as Ken Paxton in Texas, you know, Ashley Moody here in my state of Florida, Andrew Bailey in Missouri, you know, Brenna Byrd in Iowa. There are some very high-profile Republican AGs who are doing their job and using their own state power to try to go after these organizations. But, you know, what I was trying to do was essentially just issue a rally cry to every Republican state AG office out there. You know, try and provide some support for the Republicans in Congress. There is a lot out there trying to censor conservative speech. We need all the help that we can get to fight back.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I want to go deeper into this in the couple of minutes that we have left. This cancel culture is real, and it manifests itself, be it in debanking or in Facebook or Twitter, whatever it may be. So many different ways the cancel culture is real, and it's coming after conservatives. It's coming after anyone who opposes this left-wing ideology. You have a call to the Republican attorney generals, as you just referenced, specifically in the last couple of minutes we have. What are you encouraging them to do?
So, I mean, first of all, I mean, some of these organizations, I think, benefit at a tax level when it comes to either a federal or state level. So, you know, if there is any organization out there that is trying to suppress particular speech, you know, that should be an immediate red flag for purposes of actually losing your tax exempt status. I mean, that is ludicrous that any of these organizations could possibly benefit in any way under the tax code whatsoever. You know, more generally speaking, you know, at a barest of bare minimum, you know, issue a public release that you are calling for an investigation just to shine a spotlight. I mean, sometimes something as simple, Congressman, as just shining a spotlight on an organization that is ultimately trying to degrade the public good, undermine the common good, and tear this country apart at the seams. Something as simple as an investigation could get the attention of more investigative reporters. Ultimately, what I'm trying to do with this article is just try to make people aware of what is going on right now. Because, you know, I did overhear your conversation with the previous guest, debanking, deplatforming. You know, these are ultimately the civil rights issues of our times. I mean, debanking, if anything, terrifies me even more than deplatforming. I am terrified, as someone who is clearly right of center and contributing to the public square, I am terrified that my bank might try to cut me off tomorrow, or my retirement account might try to tell me to divest Charles Schwab from their platform, whatever. These are really terrifying times, frankly, and, you know, it's going to take some willingness on the part of Republicans to get their hands a little dirtier than they might be instinctively willing and able to do. For example, you know, in the context of deplatforming and debanking, one possible remedy would be common carrier regulation, the same way that we regulate the trains and airplanes, the same way that we regulate your cell phone companies, Verizon or AT&T. They cannot discriminate on the basis of content of your viewpoint. So I think basically that Chase and Bank of America should not be able to discriminate on the basis of their customers' viewpoint as well. That would be just one example there.
Excellent suggestion. Josh Hammer of Article 3 Project. Great conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch and for breaking all this down for us. I think that your article has made some big waves, and we want to help every way we can as well. Thanks for joining us on Washington Watch.
Thanks so much.
All right, that wraps up yet another edition of Washington Watch. I want to thank you so much for joining us as always, and be sure to hang on tomorrow as we continue bringing you news from a biblical perspective. Have a good evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.